every word.
We are featuring Canadian artists this week. It's the adjunct to last week's Canada Day celebrations. I mean, there's so many good Canadian artists. That's Michael Bublé, unbelievably popular, talented singer out from the greater Vancouver area. Very pleased to feature him and all our Canadian artists. And a reminder that today we're giving a tip of the hat or dedicating this show to Kamloops, British Columbia, hosting the BC Summer Olympics, Special Olympics Summer Games there right now. And when I say hosting, what we're celebrating is the way a whole community comes together with the business community, the educational community, others stepping up, whether it's people driving buses. The food service is unbelievable to feed over 2,000 people every day, three times a day. Just the list you can imagine of taking on an event that big, the way they've done it in Medicine Hat also. I mean, it's just mind-boggling, and it's just so great to be able to celebrate. Brian Varga, by the way, is the chair of the Alberta Special Olympics Summer Game being held in Medicine Hat. But I can imagine what Darlene Keeler's doing, as she was sort of the head of that whole food region. And I just think it's, you know, good things happen not through our divisiveness, which is so preached in politics. It's by people coming together and seeing a bigger picture that's far outside themselves. So, hey, I'm celebrating Kamloops today. I'm celebrating Medicine Hat. By the way, Kamloops is a beautiful city if you want to go golfing, too, if you want to go and spin at the Thompson River, all of that kind of stuff. So enjoy it. Time now for this week's quote of the week. The National Post, Christy Blatcher, is one of those rare members of the Canada's, at least, commentariat, I think, who regularly thinks past what I call the received wisdom of Canada's progressive elites. And then she's got a lot of talent. I mean, she expresses it in such a highly entertaining manner. Well, this past week, in addressing the $10.5 million payout and public apology to confessed terrorist Omar Khadr, she wrote, "As a wise historian friend says, ours is a society increasingly reliant upon social progressive notions that seek to erase all images of injustice to individuals, no matter how long ago or in what context or circumstance. Our society accepts that we allow all of our victims to become our heroes because a certain strata of Canadians feels good, because Canada is proving that we are more just than everyone else on the planet." You know, no country's leaders have ever spent so much time and energy virtue signaling to the rest of the world as we have in Canada regarding their own great enlightened goodness, with phrases like "Canada's back," "the world needs more Canada." And guess what? That all-world smugness and $2.50 will buy you a Starbucks coffee. I'm really pleased to welcome back to the show. I always get excited when I know that Greg Weldon can find time for us here on the weekend, and I think it's a terrific week to have him. Well, every week is. Greg, welcome back to the show. So pleased you find time for us.
It's my pleasure, Michael. If I might tip my cap to you and you celebrate Medicine Hat and celebrate you and your part in bringing everyone together. I know when I've been in Vancouver and I've kind of been, you know, around the periphery of your effort on the behalf of the Special Olympics, it's a sight to see. You're an inspiration, and I just wanted to send that out there.
Well, much appreciated, and I've got a ton of company. That's great. Hey, Greg, the reason I just said that this is a great week to have you is that, you know, and for people who aren't familiar with Greg's work, you can find it at Weldon Online, weldononline.com, but I'll tell you one little aspect about it. I was introduced to Greg Weldon through other analysts. I mean, we're going back a long time now, but it was through other analysts saying, oh, this is a guy that does work around the world. It's global macro stuff. Then he gets specific into what trends it might be U.S. equities are going in right now. It might be Japanese, actually. Certainly it's Canadian equities. But it's also what's precious metals doing, what are the energy markets doing. So he covers all of that. And as I say, he's the analyst that other analysts read. And that's why I thought, you know, we're talking a lot about interest rates, because it looks like the Bank of Canada is going to bump their rates up next week, bump them again maybe in the fall, maybe the October meeting, who knows. We obviously got the States bumping their rates. Lots of talk in the UK now, in the EU. And I think it's just so fundamental to investment to think, is this a sea change? Have we seen the bottom in rates and now we're sort of going to edge our way up?
Well, I mean, that's the $64 million question for sure. There's a lot of evidence that might suggest, particularly from a technical perspective on the long-term bond charts. I mean, you look at the case here in the U.S., you look at the case in Canada. I mean, you're violating multi-decade downtrend lines. So the question becomes, how big of a reversal is this? Is it a kind of medium to intermediate term, cyclical reversal? Or is this a long-term secular reversal where you're never going to see these kind of yields again? And I think that you really have to differentiate between countries and then understand that you have some real crosswinds here. U.S., you see the biggest crosswinds. Canada, a little bit less so. So let's talk about Canada, because you have record exports. You have record imports. You have a situation where the housing market, you know, the Bank of Canada has been kind of verbally talking down the housing market for a while in terms of, you know, some bubblicious flavor to it, which clearly is evident. And you have, you know, an employment situation which looks quite solid, against which you have inflation that is moving to the downside with little impetus to increase. You have energy prices on the run. You have the precious metals breaking down. So, wow, you talk about the crosswinds here, the cross currents, you know, it's an undertow that is significant. If you get too caught up in thinking you can get far enough offshore without swimming back to the beach, you might get nailed pretty good. So the bottom line is we think there is a big move coming in the bond markets. It's already started. We think you got to pick your countries very carefully. We think the biggest offshoot of that is, even if it's just psychological, is what kind of damage could this do to the psyche of the stock markets? And I think you see wobble for sure in Canada. You saw it on Friday. It was a technical breakdown, frankly. And you're talking about the same kind of long-term turn to the upside in yields would correlate with a long-term turn of the same technical significance to the downside in equities. To me, I think the bigger trade is potentially on the downside in equities, because everyone's involved, because you have a situation in the U.S. where you look at the tech stocks. I mean, you know, some of these stocks, Amazon, Google, they're trading $1,000 a share. They are so widely owned, and yet the returns have been still solid but diminished. And more importantly, Michael, the volume has virtually collapsed because these are such high nominal prices. Everyone that wants to own them owns them. They're widely owned. If you get a situation where investors try and all take profits at the same time and there's a vacuum of volume, you could be looking at a serious, serious type of corrective move to the downside in equities led by the U.S., Canada not far behind, Europe kind of trailing.
And everyone can understand that, because from this point of view, that, you know, people look at their savings account and it's only going to pay you 0.5% or something, you know, and so they looked for other things, and the stock market was the main beneficiary. And what Greg's describing here is, what if we give it back the alternative that maybe there'll be more attractive yields coming and you won't have to take the risk of the stock market? And as you say, Greg, I love the point that you're making, that, you know, everybody seems to be invested at this point. So it's a real flashing a warning sign if this rate momentum continues.
Yeah, and it's fundamental in nature and then turns into a technical issue. So it's fundamental in the sense that what you're doing is reversing the trend that began with what I call the St. Paddy's Day monetary massacre, which was March 17th, 2009 in the U.S., when the U.S. Fed announced for the first time that they would monetize Treasury debt, QE, something that you and I talked about 2006, when it was considered monetary heresy and would never happen. Then it was negative rates. Will never happen. And look at all that's happened since. So this is a trend that began then that you're proposing to reverse with Fed talk centering around a word that I just abhor because it's so misplaced in its use, which is normalization. You're going to normalize rates. And I agree. You don't need emergency level interest rates. There's no doubt about that. The question becomes, what is normal? So is normal, and this is really, to me, the $64 million question we have, how do we answer that in terms of the bond market, which I think it will be the key driver here, and that becomes, how do we define normalization? Well, you might define normalization with having a positive, real interest rate. Okay, you can go back to any time before 1990 and Greenspan, there was no such thing as zero real rates, where you never brought the Fed funds rate down to the rate of inflation. That was considered monetary heresy then. So maybe normalization is some level of positive real rates. And guess what? That's still, you know, a significant move away, especially for a country like Canada. I mean, you're going to go from, you know, 25 basis points to, you know, 1.25. I don't know you're going to be able to get there, particularly with what's going on in commodity markets. So, you know, I think the way to look at that is, you know, normalization rates. What does that mean? What is normal? You know, and is this really an end to the trend of QE? And that seems like that is the risk. That, in fact, you know, the ECB, even going back to March and Draghi's press conference, drug. And then you had the minutes of their most recent meeting, which were published this past week. Very specific, very similar, you know, a little bit of a message within, you know, between the lines, but it was very decipherable to where it says, we're going to taper. We are going to wind down QE. The Fed has said they're going to wind down the reinvestment of, you know, of maturing bonds proceeds. Okay, so you can make a very strong case that this is the end of an essentially a decade-long move on the behalf of central banks to artificially depress interest rates. And it's like kind of the risk here is that, you know, if you hold the beach ball under the water in a pool for a long time and then you let go, what happens? It explodes up through the surface. So the risk here is a bond market that kind of, you know, they lose control. I mean, you can't say we're going to taper, and the Fed can't say we're going to initiate this program of monthly reductions in reinvestment and then reverse that policy 3 months from now if the stock market's down big. So they could be, you know, kind of painting themselves in a corner. There's a need to do it, which makes it such a difficult thing. There's no easy answers to this problem. But the risk is you see a move in interest rates that gets a little bigger than you might have wanted to see. Let's not forget, we're not even talking about sovereign debt in the U.S. We're not talking about sovereign debt in Europe, which if interest rates go a lot higher, you're extrapolating the dynamic around sovereign debt to a point where it could become a real crisis risk again, let alone the fact that you're pricking a bubble in the stock market that's been a decade in the making, against which consumers have borrowed, you know, because the collateral is going up. It's not housing anymore. It's the stock market. Wow, you think of all the tangent risk elements off of this, and it gets a little like you want to cringe.
Well, and you're doing a great job of describing why this is such an important subject, because the ripple effects, and you just mentioned it, but this one that's been on my mind is, you know, governments are awash in record levels of debt. I mean, in Canada, we added $28 billion to, you know, our debt last year, the deficit financing. The government doesn't have a plan at the federal level to pay down the debt. Our biggest province, Ontario, I mean, my goodness, what they're doing there. I mean, they say they're a balanced budget, but that's through accounting tricks. I mean, the fact is they're adding $9 billion to their debt. Europe, as you say, then we get down to the state. I look at Illinois. I mean, here's a fact for everyone listening today. You want to know what happens when you get your finances out of control? Well, they raise your income tax 32%. That's what's happening in Illinois, you know, let alone at the city level. I'm going, how high could they afford to have these rates go? Because, of course, the interest cost then goes up.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point in terms of Canada for your listeners. I mean, the March budget deficit was the deepest in history, okay? And this is a time when the deficit is the deepest in history, despite the fact that revenue increased because spending increased so much more. So if you're now going to raise interest rates to the point where, you know, servicing that debt, because in the U.S., it really does become an issue of what is the cost of the interest rates that you have to pay out on the debt? Well, we have record debt that's doubled since 2008 at a time when interest rates have been at record lows and interest costs have still gone up as a percentage of GDP, as a percentage of debt. I mean, this is a powder keg that no one talks about anymore. Why? Because central banks have gotten everyone into la-la land where they've kind of forgotten the fact that you have record amounts of debt. Italy has a record amount of debt. You know, Canada with the worst deficit ever, even though, you know, revenue's going up. I mean, what happens when you got to service that debt, start to cost, you know, cut spending, okay, because spending is up more than revenue at the record deficit. I mean, wow, that's such a conundrum. How that all plays out, I don't know, but it's one of those kind of things where, again, it makes you cringe because you wonder, are they letting the genie out of the bottle? And this is at a time when inflation, we already know, peaked in February. We knew it would peak in February because that was the calendar dynamic around energy prices. We knew that commodities were going to come off here, or at least the CPI and inflation data would. And now still central banks are becoming more hawkish. So what happens? You have a near collapse in commodity prices going on. So, I mean, the CRB is close to its secular lows here from the last couple of years. Wow, I wouldn't want to be a central banker right now. They have an almost unbelievably unenviable, undoable task to kind of, you know, balance all this out and, you know, kind of navigate us out of emergency interest rate dumb to a place where we could actually be safe. And I'm not sure how that's going to go.
You can see why I love it when I get Greg Weldon on the line, that view that takes into account all the different ripple effects here, and we'll get more to that. I mean, there's never enough time. That's why, you know, I subscribe to Weldon Online, the Weldon Financial Reports. You can find them at Weldon Online, but, you know, the trend tracker, for example, is very important because I want to know what trend the specific investment in is. I mean, whether I'm worried about what, right now, I'm very interested in the energy market, for example. You know, I want to look at what the Canadian dollar is doing. I want to know what U.S. stocks are doing, you know, and I want to look at what Europe's doing. Well, the trend tracker tells us what direction they're all going, which I find absolutely fascinating. I got to take a break. We only have a couple minutes left. I'll come back with Greg, and I'll just get bottom line stuff. I'm going to get his take on gold. I'll get his take on oil right now. You've heard him on stocks that there's a warning light being flashed. We certainly heard it on bonds. Maybe get a little take on the Canadian dollar. All of that coming your way. Stay with us right here on the Money Talks Network. Welcome to Canada's number one rated financial show. Actually, might be number one rated talk show in all the markets, too. But and that's possible because of you listening today, and I'm glad you're here. But we're rewarding you with bringing you Greg Weldon right now. You know, fabulous analyst. I'm always excited when I get Greg because I can get down to the bottom line of stuff and get that proper macro picture of what's going on. Greg, as you know, there's never enough time, so I'm going to give you a chance for like 30-second answers on each one, but give you your quick take on oil right now.
Sure. We're bearish energy right now. We have been since above $50. We're short the December contract. There's SCO is the ultra short leveraged for risk traders that plays the bear side of crude. We think the most recent rally was a perfect Fibonacci retracement. It gave me another opportunity to be short. The bottom line is there is a ton of supply out there. Nigeria, Libya were the wild cards to the OPEC deal. That wild card's been played. U.S. production is through the roof with no signs of stopping, and inventories still remain above 500 million barrels. So energy bearish for sure.
What about, that was oil. What about gold?
You know, gold is a mystery here. I have to say, you know, I can't remember a time when the dollar was down 6% in 2+ months and gold was down 6% in 2+ months. The relationship there has completely broken down. One of two things going on. Somebody's keeping their foot on gold, and that's always a possibility because, you know, gold's been manipulated as long as I've been in the market, and that's tough to fight. Or there's something more going on here in terms of kind of the message that gold and, you know, the entirety of the commodities complex outside of grains, which are in the crop season now, are sending, you know, in terms of central banks and in terms of, you know, the moves towards more hawkishness and the rise in rates and so on and so forth. I mean, you might think that, well, hey, real rates in most bond yields and certainly most official rates are still negative. They're still well below the rate of inflation. If gold can't rally in that environment when the dollar is depreciating, that scares me for gold. It's a neutral. We don't want to be short because we think there's something else going on here. But, you know, unfortunately, it's breaking down. Silver leading the way. It's clear-cut long-term technical breakdown right now.
Can you give me 25 seconds on the Canadian dollar?
We like it here, even though, again, the commodity negative dynamic is there, the energy negative dynamic is there, but the banks are higher, the bond market's higher, the stock market's down. We like the Canadian dollar, and we like being long the Canadian dollar against being short the TSX 60. Canada is one of our actually favorite places to be short the stock market. In the bond market, we prefer to be short Germany, frankly. So it's long Canadian dollar, long the euro currency, long Poland and Czech in currencies, short the German bond market, and short the Canadian stock market.
Hey, look, for more information, go to Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N, Weldon Online, weldononline.com. Fantastic stuff. Greg, thank you once again. Great to chat with you.
My pleasure, Michael. Thank you. Always happy to contribute.
Stay tuned. I got a shocking stat for you, a great shocking stat. Stay with us.
Big rock stars and living hilltop bosses driving 15 cars. The girls come easy and the drugs come cheap. Well, I'll stay skinny because we just won't eat.
Oh, you know those guys. That's Nickelback. Salute to Canadian artists. We've done it for the last two weekends. Why? Because I'm not sure if there's, I'd have to think about this longer, but it seems to me off the top of my head that I'm not sure there's any other area where Canadians have had a bigger impact in terms of culture than our music. I mean, the top performers in the world are Canadian. Justin Bieber, arguably the most popular performer, but you've got Drake. You've got, we featured earlier today, The Weeknd. Shania Twain's got to come back. The list is just so long. That's why I needed it for two weekends. Hey, if you're just joining us, we're giving a salute and dedicating today's show to Kamloops, the tournament champion of Canada. They host all sorts of events, but nowhere more special than for the Special Olympics Summer Games. And the thing, why am I emphasizing this? And they're doing it today in Medicine Hat. Right now, in Medicine Hat, the community comes together. That's how good thing happens. I'm that sort of lonely voice out there saying, this politics of division leads nowhere good. And we're seeing more and more evidence of it, really through the Canada Day celebrations. Well, this is the good side of Canada, where people put everything else aside for something other than their own benefit. I've been very uncomfortable over the years with this talk about rewarding the middle class. You know what? The middle class has it fine. What about the vulnerable? What about people with special needs, with intellectual disabilities, as Special Olympics focuses on? What about those families who have a lifetime of care for their children and a lifetime of love for them, to be sure? But let's face it, it takes more resources, more time, more energy, even more dedication, as it were. And I see that every time I participate with Special Olympics. I saw it firsthand yesterday and the day before in Kamloops. And again, it happens because of people pulling together. I mean, I'm looking at the chair of that event, Carl De Bruyn, you know, fabulous job as he brought people together to talk about and arrange things. I'm looking at Sandy Mahone, you know, chair of Special there in Medicine Hat right now. Les Pearson, head of the volunteers. That is a big job, by the way, all in Medicine Hat. I'm thinking of the food services. I saw it firsthand feeding around over 2,000 people. John Dacrick, imagine. Think of all the work if I said you're going to have 10 people for dinner tonight. Well, how about 2,000 for dinner, lunch, and breakfast? The really interesting part, that they need more medical services than sort of your generic events. Andy Philpott's doing that in Kamloops right now. I mean, the list is just so long of the people who've had to come together and, you know, communities, the mayor's office, then you get, you know, the educational community gets involved, the custodians get involved to get those schools in shape so they can have the athletes there. I mean, that list is too long to go into, but I'll tell you, it just puts a big, big smile on my face. And I'll tell you one thing, if you've never had a chance to do this, I can't encourage you enough to go to a Special Olympics event in your area. It's absolutely fantastic. And it's really funny. I've brought many friends of mine to different events over the years, and everyone, I mean, this is a money-back guarantee. I was just talking to a couple of, 20-somethings yesterday who I encouraged to get involved, and they're going to get involved with Special Olympics. And I'll tell you, there's nothing more than you can do for your children than to get them to do it. I'm sorry I'm going on and on, but I feel that passionately about it. I feel that passionately that this is a good part of Canada, and you can't spend your time in a better way than helping people who deserve so much of our support. So there you have it. I'll try and behave now. Time now for this week's shocking stat. This week comes two numbers from Italy. The first, 12,000. That's the number of refugees that arrived in Italy in just 2 days last week. 12,000 on 22 boats, from most of them, all of them from Libya, actually, in 48 hours. Do you know what? That brings the number of refugees this year, like I'm talking about the six-month total, to over 100,000 arriving from to Italy from North Africa. 100,000. Well, of course, Italy's demanding more support from the EU to handle the crisis. They want the enforcement of a quota system. But this is what I say about the problems in the EU. I'm going to be right, by the way, that I'm already proven right when you have Brexit. But well before that, I was saying you're seeing the demise of the European Union. It's going to change. Well, this is another way of measuring it. You've already got Poland and Hungary rejecting the EU's quota system. Austria just deployed troops, tanks, other armored vehicles along the border to block any migrant influx out of Italy. They just passed laws this past week to prosecute anyone making a false refugee claim. I mean, the numbers coming into Italy are so large that there's absolutely no chance for integration and assimilation into Italian society. That will have consequences. Now, the failure of the EU's open refugee party is one of the most is one of the most underreported stories in both Canada and the U.S. It's where the practical has absolutely overwhelmed these kind of feel-good, simplistic, symbolic slogans of an open refugee problem. And you know what? You got to ask where it's going to end. Why? Because there's 19 million refugees in North Africa and the Middle East. Think about that number. The second number, I'm going to do it quickly, 85,000. Now think about this one. That's the number of applicants for just 30 banking jobs that were recently posted. They got 85,000 applicants. Wow, that is a reflection of much of what's going on in terms of the economic problems. One of the big complaints I have about our politicians is that they never acknowledge the failure of the European welfare state model, and it is a failure. We're seeing it in spades across the European continent. And you know what? We still have politicians that want to bring that model to Canada. Hey, that's beyond ideology. That's into stupidity. There's a practical reality, and that's where the rubber hits the road. But that's the clash we have, the symbolic, ideologically based statements, and then they run headlong into practicality. That's where the problems begin. I'll take a break. I'll come back. Hey, Ozzie Jurek's on vacation, but right now I got to be talking more about this sea change in interest rates and money things. I got Victor Dare live from the trading desk, and I got a raft of goofies coming your way, so you got to stay with us. I'm glad you're with us celebrating Kamloops and Medicine Hat, who are hosting summer games for Special Olympic athletes and their families, and the hundreds and hundreds of volunteers who make that happen, the business community coming together to sponsor these and individual donations. And I thanks our Money Talks audience for helping out. I think I'm going to get more painful about this as the year goes by, but then you'll thank me in a year. You'll say, I had a great year. Why? Because I thought about somebody else first, and I helped out some very deserving people and gave support to their families. So you better be ready for that one. Hey, time now to get to the live to the trading desk, and I've been looking forward to this. I've been sending Victor Adair little emails during the week. I say, Vic, what do you think of this? What are you looking at the bond market? What's going on here? Well, he's here with me now to share his thoughts with us. Vic, as you know, we've been featuring a little bit about this sea change because I can't think of a more important subject than if we're getting a change in the bond market, if we're getting a change in interest rates, then a whole bunch of stuff changes, as Greg Weldon was just alluding to.
Yeah, it was great to listen to my old friend Greg, and I thought he just laid it out really well. You know, we've had 10 years, a decade of ultra-easy money from the central banks. You know, We a year ago now, we had trillions of dollars worth of sovereign debt trading at negative yields. Clearly, you know, something big is likely to happen. What did he call it? The tangent risks make you want to cringe. I mean, I absolutely agree. But and here's the thing, though. You know, the bearish case for bonds, and I did some reading this morning just on the Financial Times in the UK. They had a couple of guys on there, both people that are running huge amounts of money, you know, great track records and all that sort of thing. One guy thinks that it's impossible, really, for bond yields to climb much, and another guy thinks it's impossible for them to not do that. So there's a real divergence of opinion out there, and whatever happens, we're likely to see rock and roll across a number of markets. And I thought Greg also made a great point that he thinks the bigger trade is in the stocks, and, you know, you follow his reasoning, because they're so owned. And with all the money we've seen going into passive investing or index investing, who buys if this market starts to break? So volatility has been really low. People have sold the hell out of volatility, reaching for yield. My favorite trade recommendation at the back of the World Outlook Conference was buy volatility. You know, something's level of bust here, and it could be very exciting.
I think we've been very clear on this show about getting cautious, about talking to your financial advisor, making sure the risk you've got in your portfolio is appropriate for you. A lot of times markets run up, and that's changed your risk profile. I know myself, I've become much more cautious. I know, Vic, it was about 5 weeks ago, you and I talked specifically about the tech stocks that have been leading the market higher, you know, the high flyers. Earlier today, I talked with Mike Levy about the huge break in Tesla. That was one of the stocks leading us higher, and that's one of the reasons I'm backing off. Is I don't think the techs have given me any reason to own them right now, and I think they've shown me a lot of vulnerability.
Well, one of the trades that I have on is I own out-of-the-money puts on the S&P, and I've been buying these, you know, over the past couple of months and seeing them dribble away in terms of value. It's a very limited risk trade, obviously, if I'm buying an option, but I just think, again, this thing about buy volatility. The option vol's real low, so the puts are cheap relative to what they might be otherwise, and I think my risk-reward ratio is good. I don't own stocks. I think, I don't own a portfolio of stocks because I'm a trader, but I thought Greg really nailed it when he said that the central banks have got everybody in la-la land. You know, this has been going on for so long, we think it's going to go on forever. And, you know, the central banks have been waving a flag in front of us in a way saying, hey, things are changing. We actually are going to stop doing all of that we've been doing because, again, as Greg says, there's no need for these emergency low-level interest rates. And we've just seen what's happened in Canada. I mean, the Bank of Canada came out, it seems like it was just a 3 weeks or so ago, and basically said, hey, we just changed our mind. We're going to start raising rates. And the market was stunned, and Canadian dollars rallied 3 cents since then. I think that's like an example of kind of the ripple effect that will go across markets as the central banks try to make these changes, try to take back the real low interest rates we've had for so long.
You know, it's funny. I said this quite a while ago, and I've done it a few times, just saying, you know, one of the themes of our show, if I could sum it up in a quote, because I appreciate that people don't run around, especially in the summer, and say, let's talk about interest rates or let's talk about markets and that kind of thing, and I'll let it just take care of itself. And I love that J.P. Morgan quote is, you can ignore economics and finance. Trouble is they won't ignore you. This is such a good example of that, that we have to put the red, and we have been doing this for about 4 weeks, big red flashing light that we're looking for the change in interest rates. And as Greg said, the real debate isn't whether we're having the range go up, it's whether this is a long-term change in that interest rate environment as opposed to sort of a short-term, half point up, 1 point up, but are we going way back up to what would be more historical in nature? I mean, that's the, as he says, the $64 million question. I'd say $64 trillion. I'll top Greg on that one because you got to get that right. Going forward, you got to get that right.
Yeah, and, you know, there's interest rates and there's interest rates, and we never get enough time to really get into it here, but, you know, on our website that Drew and I, that's my son Drew and I have, the polarfuturesgroup.com, we put up these trading notes. Let me go specifically to gold. Greg, again, said it's a mystery. You know, here for the longest time, you've had this relationship between the U.S. dollar and gold. If the U.S. dollar is going up, that is at least a headwind for gold. More than likely, if the U.S. dollar is strong, gold's kind of in the tank. And yet here the last, let's call it, couple of months, we've seen the U.S. dollar weak and gold weak. And you say, what's the candidate? I will tell you, our view is, and Greg alluded to this as well, it's real interest rates. We have seen real interest rates start to rise sharply here in the last couple of months. You can put a chart up, and I do this, and you track real yields. So let's look at the U.S. five-year TIPS, for instance. Track that with gold. They are moving in lockstep. So we've seen this sharp rise in real rates as the credit markets realize, hey, things are really changing. We're actually seeing, I think, more dramatic of a change in real rates than we're seeing in nominal rates. Nominal rates just being, you know, what the interest rate is on the bond. So this backup in real rates has hurt the gold market, and I think the change in, Greg says again, you got to pick your country, the change in the U.S. dollar relative to the other currencies has been about that change in perception in the relationship, say, between what the ECB is doing and what the Fed's doing. It is so core to everything we trade as to what the market thinks about or anticipates what's happening in interest rates.
That's just a great summation, Vic, and I appreciate you finding time for us this weekend. And once again, my thanks to you for help with Special Olympics. But what a great weekend, eh, Vic? That's where the Summer Games are happening in Kamloops, happening right now in Alberta in Medicine Hat. And I'll tell you, it's absolutely spectacular. So thanks to you, and we'll chat with next week. I got a feeling we'll have more to talk about.
Chances are. Okay, yeah. Mike, have a great weekend.
Hey, stay with me. Hey, I stirred up a lot of Goofy Awards for you. Come back. You'll hear my Goofies right here on the Money Talks Network. Hey, I hope you're getting a chance to go to moneytalks.net. If you missed anything, you can always go back and get the program results. And, I mean, it's really worthwhile hearing what we've had to say today on the show, because I'm telling you, as Victor just was reiterating, it's a sea change happening right now. We have to determine what are the implications, and consequences. So get in the habit of listening to moneytalks.net. Join us on Facebook.com. Michael Campbell's Money Talks on Facebook, and I hope you do that on a regular basis. Encourage your friends, your family, especially you got some younger people. They're not getting it anywhere else, so I hope you take a chance to do that. And by the way, while you're on moneytalks.net, then click on that little app so you can join us on the free email education service that we do. This time we're talking about how to read charts. It's a video service that before has been charged a lot of money for, but this is so important, so I hope you get it. So, time now for this week's Goofy Award. My thanks to Solera Club, and they're the sponsor of Money Talks. So, Solera Club can be found at soleraclub.com. It's a royalty base. That means you get paid first. No fees in the tech sector. Soleraclub.com. Okay, we have a quadruple header if I can get through it in time this week. Why? Because Money Talks fell on Canada Day last week, so I went easy on the goofies. Well, although my choice of you two headlining the Canada Day celebration on Parliament Hill was certainly deserving, but I didn't go further. So I got a backlog right now. So let's start with the Prime Minister wearing socks celebrating Ramadan to the Toronto Pride Parade. Wow, that PM in his socks, so proud, actually went further and had an entire Ramadan outfit. Fair enough. But to a Pride Parade? Say what? I mean, being gay is punishable by death under Islam. I mean, horrendous stories of torture and murder of gay people abound. Yet he celebrates a high Muslim holiday at the Pride Parade? He's a beauty. And speaking of confused and gay, let's give a shout-out to the organizers of Chicago's Dyke March, who demanded that three people who were carrying Jewish pride flags leave the march because seeing Israel, an Israeli flag, was triggering for some marchers. Isn't that perfect? The only country in the Mideast where it's safe to be gay, and they're banned from a gay march. Instead, organizers said it was a pro-Palestinian gay march. Well, if that doesn't go down in the Hall of Fame of oxymorons, I'm not sure what would. But then there's nothing like supporting anti-Semitism in the gay community. That seems like it's kind of getting to be all the rage in progressive circles. And for those of you who love a good Rick Mercer-like America's Dumb Story for U.S. Independence Day, how about this? According to a new Marist poll, nearly a quarter of Americans don't know what country they gained independence from. Some named Canada, Mexico, Russia, my personal favorite, when they named Afghanistan is what the U.S. gained independence from. Now, before you get all political on me and get smug, guess which group had the biggest number of, let's just say, confused? Was it independents, Republicans, or Democrats? No, it was not the independents. Or it was not Hillary Clinton's deplorable Republicans. They had the same percentage of people who didn't know. No, the Democrats had 72% more respondents who had no idea of who they gained independence from. And finally, I'm going to give a big shout out to the New York Times. You know, since last October, they've been parroting Hillary Clinton's line that 17 intelligence agencies confirmed Russian interference in the U.S. election. You must have heard it. This was an unquestioned fact that underpinned much of the Trump-Russia story. Well, it seems like the only problem was it wasn't true. WikiLeaks told them last October. They said Clinton's 17 intelligence agency may be the biggest, most immediately disprovable whopper ever intentionally made during a debate, except for the fact that the New York Times, USA Today, CNN's Megyn Kelly, others had no interest in disproving it. But the nonsense got too embarrassing this week. The New York Times finally issued a retraction. They said the assessment was made by four intelligence agencies, not 17. Why do you think Donald Trump complains about fake news? Well, let's hear it for that. My thanks for listening. Go out and I celebrate. Tip of the hat to Kamloops, wonderful city, and Medicine Hat. And thanks for listening.